as an artist, as a creative, if you're going to do things the right way, you have to be all in, you know, because that way you have no regrets, you know. Make sure you're honest about what you want to do, why you want to do it, and whatever it takes for you to get the knowledge that you need, get it and utilize it, understand it, know where it all comes from, and then take a chance. Take a chance, and but you got to do that every day.
So here we are with Desron Douglas, bassist of Trey Anastasio Band, and so much more. Des, man, so glad to have you here. How you doing today?
I'm all right. Happy to be here. What's happening? Thank you for having me.
Des here recently came out with his own album, Atalaya. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did. It's pronounced Atalaya. Yes, yes.
Such an awesome mix of like adventure, but also just such beautiful sections in there. And he's played with many prestigious musicians. He's a teacher at NYU. Definitely a lot of wisdom on the show right now. I want to talk about like imagination for you as a musician. Mm-hmm. It's like when I think of imagination, obviously it's like visual, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm curious when it comes to improvisation, where so much communication is happening so quickly, like what does your imagination feel like when you're in your mind kind of, what's that next thing you're going to play? And you're in that moment where maybe it's all like a blur. Like mm-hmm. How would you describe what your imagination's like musically?
Well, musically, first of all, my personal imagination is vast. I'm a science fiction head. I like fantasy. I like something that could be real, but is not real. Musically, there's a point when you have to let go, and I'm good at letting go. You know, it's a difficult thing to do because you're wearing your heart on your sleeve. You know, everyone always wants to be in control all the time, you know, but with control, there's no imagination. You know, you can't control someone's imagination. You know, you can't control the word imagination. In the word, you have image and nation. You know, you're imagining a nation. You know, that's very personal right there. You know, the nation is yourself, and you're putting your image on it. You know, so I have no control over that unless I'm in your head. And sometimes, frankly, I don't want to be in people's heads. You know, you keep what's in your head, I'll keep what's in mine. You know, I'll give you a glimpse, you give me a glimpse. I don't want to be in your head, and you shouldn't want to be in mine. But we can share glimpses of each other's, you know, so it's very personal, you know. Sometimes we meet up on the same plane. It's like, hey, you're here. I didn't know you could be here. Hey, man, you know, wow. You know, this past Saturday night, I played with James Carney's quartet. You know, I'm just using examples of imagination. And for a period of time, like before the pandemic, it was like 2.5-3 year period where I was working with James a lot. We did a great record called Pure Heart. We also did another record that got lost in the can. We were also talking about that. You know, we did a whole session, and the inevitable happened, almost like force majeure with COVID. Like a button was pushed and the whole session was lost. 2 days of recording, gone, you know. Rarely happens, but happened. So that's a vibration that we all talk about that's lost. So we try to get back to that. Anyway, fast forward, we hadn't played together as a quartet. James's quartet is Ravi, me, and Tom Rainey. And I love Tom Rainey's playing. I hadn't played with him in a while, since like 2019, right before the crisis. And so we're on the bandstand, and immediately, maybe like into the second tune, me and Tom are thinking about the same things, like lickety split. Like he starts an idea and I'm finishing his idea, you know, and he doesn't know what I'm going to play. I start an idea, he's finishing it. And then we got to the point where like we were thinking about the same thing at the same time, like within improvised music, you know. And I'm like afterward, we just looked at each other. We were like, yeah, man, damn, you know, good to see you, you know, like, damn, man, you know, it's always the same feeling. It's like, can I buy you a drink? No, I'll buy you a drink, man, you know. Thank you for making me feel good. Thank you for making me feel good. It's always, you know, that's imagination. being able to let go, you know, not knowing what's going to happen. Everybody always wants to know what's going to happen. So you can make a decision based on, you know, what's coming at you, you know, but you have to make a decision anyway. Right. So why not let go? If something happens, you're going to, whatever decision you make, if it's honest, you should be able to express it, you know, and no one's going to say something's wrong with it because it's honest. You know, if it comes off honest, it just is what it is. But that's a hard thing to do. You know, you might be practicing something, you know, you got this one lick or this one mode that you've been shedding on for like the last 2 weeks, and you've set up this gig so that when you get to this one part on this one particular tune, you can debut this lick that you've been working on for 2 weeks, you know, and then lo and behold, when you get to that tune, the creator's like, I don't care how much you practice that, you're not going to be able to hit five of those notes, you know? And so then you get to that point and then you realize, you know, you have a moment where you realize, I'm about to jack this all up. It's not going to work. Now you start sweating, and then you start vibing everyone else in the band because you're like, man, let's not go to that part, or let's go to that part. I'm going to work it out. You know, I'm going to, no matter how many times I've screwed up, we're going to do it over again. I'm going to keep doing that shit, you know? And it's like, why? What's the point of that? You've left me already. You've already left me, you know, you know, especially as a composer, when I'm a side man, you know, or a side person, when I write something, I'm never going to, try to control what's being played by the people I decide to play it with. You know, I want their input. Yeah, I gave the vision. Like, okay, hey, people, this is the plan. Boom, this is the plan. Now I got to go on the same journey with you, you know? So who am I to be like, okay, no, you should be walking this way. Oh no, you should be looking this way. Don't touch the raspberries. You know, watch out for the nail over there. No. Meanwhile, I've stepped on a nail. I touched a raspberry. I'm poisoned. My ear fell off. You know, now I got, you know, my shit's all fucked up and it's my tune, you know, because I'm trying to control what everyone else is doing. There's no time for that. I've been in situations like that. And I play team ball. I'll deal with it. But it's always beautiful when you're in a situation, you know, for example, I'm doing this record with Lou Hayes and we've been working out the music. I love working with Louis because he tells us what he wants to do. And he's like, okay, this is what I want to do. He's like, now, what do y'all want to do? You know, how many people out here can you say you experience relationships like that with working musically? You know, fellas, this is what I want to do. What do you think? What do you want to do? You know, because we got to do it together. So let's figure it out, you know. Something I want to do might not be beneficial for all of us. I might have a harebrained idea that might sound terrible, you know? So let's try it. And what do you think? What do you want to do? Okay, I like that. Okay, I can get to something on, yeah, let's do that. Scratch whatever I said we wanted. Let's do that, you know? That's what music is all about. It's a fellowship, you know? Mm.
Hi, I'm Katie, producer of Weird Music Podcast. I want to give a big shout out to Voodoo Ranger. Live rangerously.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. Just want to let y'all know we've got these hand-dyed, ice-dyed Weird Music Podcast hoodies and also tees. If you'd like one, let us know. We'd love to get you one. Also want to give a big shout out to Voodoo Ranger from New Belgium Brewing for sponsoring this podcast. And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Also big thank you to our local print shop, Franklinton Press. Definitely hit them up for any of your custom merch or custom printing needs. They'll take good care of you. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
Can you talk to me about what you think it is about music that can cause for it to heal people and just kind of allow for transcendent experience?
You know, it's a vibration, man. There's so many elements of music that we don't realize happen. You know, we get caught up in the academic side of a lot, the facilitation of things a lot. And those are cool. Those are things that can be commodified heavily. You know, you can make money off of someone's genius, you know, but when you realize that, you can better yourself. You can heal yourself. You can figure some things out about yourself based off of how someone makes you feel. You want to talk about emotions and how music can heal. I played a week at Birdland with Ravi Coltrane, and this was the summer of 2012. I went through a lot. I was first diagnosed with anxiety, then from a doctor, and a lot of life things were happening. And I played this week at Birdland, and I'll never forget, I walked into the sound check, and Jerry Allen's there, the great Jerry Allen. And of course, I'm in my nerves. I'm in my feelings already. I'm about to be on stage with Jerry Allen. I mean, come on now. This is Feed the Fire. You know, I'm already in my feelings about that. Meanwhile, I feel like my life is like, you know, like I can't handle it. And so the band was Ravi. It was Ravi's gig and Marcus Gilmore on the drums. And, you know, me and Marcus are cool. It was like, okay, but I'm all up in my head and I'm trying to set up my gear and everything. And I just look up as I'm setting my stuff up. I look up and I look at Jerry, and she looks me in the eye, and it's like her eyes laser beam mine. And she just looked at me and she said, "It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And this chemical kind of like took over my body and like went to my brain. And I was in like a euphoric state for the rest of the week. And every time I'd be on the bandstand, I was on the verge of tears, man, looking at Jerry. Meanwhile, we're playing, we're hitting hard, you know, sweat, everyone's sweating, you're drooling and shit, you know, like getting to that space. And she's up in there getting to that space. I mean, she was like a ferocious predator on the instrument, but with such a sweet demeanor, you know. It's like this nice human being is playing a pile of music, levitating the bandstand, you know. And she brought me into her world. That was her way of letting me know when she said it's going to be okay. She's letting me know you're here. Come with me. We got this. Whatever you're going through, let it out on the bandstand, you know. And I healed. That week was healing, very much healing for me. And I've had many experiences like that. A lot of experiences like that with Jackie McLean. A lot of experiences like that with Pharoah Sanders. A lot of experiences like that with Cyrus Chestnut, you know, a lot of experiences like that in church, almost my first moments realizing and recognizing that vibration when you get to that space where everyone is in tune with each other. And no matter what each other is saying, everyone's like, yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Okay, where are we going next? We're in this space. Where do you want to go? Oh, that's where you want to go. Okay, I didn't know you was like that, but you know, okay, we'll go over there, you know. And everyone's just there and it's working. And then you're looking out into the audience and everyone is in the audience. They're with you like, yeah, where are y'all going? You know, bring us too, you know, okay, I didn't know y'all was going to go there, but interesting. Where are you going to go next? You know, it's that moment. And that can only happen when one gives of themselves completely, meaning you have to completely, you know, throw away your ego. Sometimes you have to throw back there what you know, what you think you know, and what you don't know. You get on stage and everyone's like, we're in this together. You know, Victor Lewis, the great drummer and composer and band leader who worked with everybody, he always says, hey man, this music is team ball. You gotta play team ball. There's no hierarchy on the bandstand. Once we're on that bandstand and in a safe place, yes, there's always going to be someone you're going to follow, you know, but you have to be able to lead. You know, some of the best leaders are the most amazing followers. You know, you can't lead if you can't follow, you know? So being in that space, you know, talking about healing and emotions, you have to realize that a C minor, flat 9, flat 13, it's not just C, E flat, G, you know, B flat, you know, it, you know, it's not just with the tritone substitution. That's not it. That is it, but that's really not it. It's what that chord causes when people hear it. It's what that chord does to the composer, what that chord does to the facilitator when played. You know, if we tap into that more, then it makes the art even more beautiful, you know. You know, instead of being like, okay, yeah, anyone can do that. That's just a chord. Yeah, of course. No one said that's not possible. Anyone can do this. This music is for everyone. This music is for everyone. But the truth of the matter is not everyone's going to get it. You know, my second week of class, I was blessed, you know, to spend time with Dr. McLean at the university and be around Nat Reeves and Steve Davis and Renee McLean. And of course, all the masters that came in, Jackie's friends, being around Cedar Walton, being around Curtis Fuller, Slide Hampton, you know, they were frequently at the university hanging. You know, what they taught me being around, you know, being around all of them is this is a life of music. You know, this music was created in the streets. It was created right here in the streets of the United States, all around the country. Yes, there were different pockets and regions that were popping, you know, a little more than others, but everyone had access to it. This music is for everyone. So my second week of class, this is what I was going to say. My second week of class, Jackie McLean had this big, he had two classes I got to take with him. His history class, and then he had a class called repertory building, where everyone in the department would get together once a week, and Jackie would run this kind of master class. And of course, you'd be playing, you know, if you had the chance to play for the master class, you know, it was like a big thing because Jackie was teaching you. He was coaching you. And if you didn't have an ensemble with him or wasn't in his ensemble, it was a great time to be around. And he brought all his friends in, you know. But in that class, before we got to all the greatness, I'll never forget this. He said, everyone, and it's like at least 55 to 60 of us students, all our different years, you know. But he said, everyone raise your hand. So we all raised our hand. And then he's looking at everyone's, okay, you put yours down, you put yours down, you put yours down. He's just random, you put yours down, you put yours down. And so he finally got to me. He's like, okay, you put yours down. And I put my hands down. I'm thinking, okay. And there was like four hands left up. So he said, yeah, this is about right. He was like, the four of you really have a chance to get this music. And everyone got pissed, man. Everyone was like, what the fuck? What does he mean? Oh, I'm Cameron, you know, he's telling me that only four of us are going to make it out of six. You know, meanwhile, you know, like, you know, a few of us were actually like, you know, like the fire was lit in our eyes. It was like going like Super Saiyan, like, okay, I'm going to be one of the four. I want it. You know, it was a way of him lighting the fire, letting you know, like, yeah, this music is for everyone, but not everyone's going to get it. If you want it, you know, you can get it. Get it the right way, you know, get it the right way. So I'm very blessed to be, to come from that lineage, to be around all those people and still be around people that, you know, I just played this past Friday night. I got a chance to play with George Coleman at Yale. And it's maybe about sixth or seventh time playing with Big George. And I've gotten burnt a couple times. Man, you know, so much music that he plays when he puts the horn in his mouth. And you have to be sharp. You know, that's a term that we were talking about this weekend, you know, like literally for like the next like 36 hours, we were just talking different musicians who play with George. It's like, you got to be sharp. You know, it's sharp. Being sharp is a higher level than being ready. You know, you got to get ready and then you got to be sharp, you know, because you're dealing with someone who's forgotten more music than you even know right now. So if he wants to play a song, he doesn't have to ask you permission. If he wants to play a song, you know, and this may have been the first time where George sent like a list of seven songs and we actually played those seven songs, but we played a bunch of other songs too, you know, and we played My Foolish Heart and thank God I heard it, you know, because I've been on bandstands with him a couple of times where he started playing something and I didn't recognize it. And you know, maybe someone else in the band didn't recognize it. You can't depend on everyone to recognize everything. You just got to be sharp, you know? So we played My Foolish Heart and in three different keys, you know, 87-year-old George Coleman, you know, you don't realize he's 87 until he takes the horn out of his mouth, you know? And then you realize I'm on the stage with someone who spent a lot of time here and looks great and still, you know, but when that horn's in his mouth, it's like flashback right back to 1968, you know, burning and on 100. And you're like, okay, maybe I don't, let me admit, just admit, I don't know shit. Let's start there. I don't know shit. But I'm ready to learn. Even if I've learned this already, I'm ready to learn again. Cause it doesn't sound right. It sounds right when he's doing it. So I want to sound like that, you know? That has nothing to do with, of course, theories involved, but it's just being sharp. Your ears got to be open. You got to be open for that connection for someone. You know, we live in a time where exactly what you're doing with the Zoom interview, someone can go online and say, I want to do this. And a million things have come up. And yes, whatever you're looking at, that probably is the way to do it. cool. But, you know, where's the fellowship? Where's the community? Where's the, you know, the foundation to where all that, you know, that statement, this is how you do it, you know, where's the why? You know, when I was coming up, I was going up to musicians being like, Mr. Walton, how do you play those 2-5-1s? And he's like, well, you know, this is why it's happening. And then, you know, this is a B flat minor and five is, and then this is why. But then, you know, when you get to the end of the song, this is why you need to play that turn. It was never how. No one ever, it was never the answer to how. But in the process of them explaining why something was done, I learned how. Okay, boom. Yeah, okay, bam. You know, and I never forget being in the masterclass with Cedar, and we got to the end of the tune, and I just so happened, I don't know why I did it, I don't know how, it just felt natural. I played a 2-5-1 to go to the top, and he stopped the whole masterclass, and he's like, "Oh, sure, Mister, do you know what you just did?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know." He said, "Well, no, you're playing the turnaround. That's the turnaround." And he said, "Sam Jones always played the turnaround to go back to the top. That's great. Keep that quality." And I was like, "Man, I felt so great. You know that you know that." I did something right. I didn't know I did it, but let me figure out what I did. Let me go back. Hey, man, did you hear what I did? Yeah, man, you played the five. You know, that's a 2-5-1. Okay, that's the turnaround. That's what a turnaround is. You know, it's something that takes us. We play the turnaround because it takes us somewhere.
I love that.
Just being the 2-5-1 of the 7 minor Mixolydian mode to this, you know.
But it's like, why is the 2-5-1 even something relevant?
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. For the same reason, when someone plays a 5-7 chord, everyone knows that it's happy birthday. And most people can figure out where the one is. Happy birthday. You know what I'm saying? You know, that alone, that's what the music is all about. You know, that's what the music is all about. That's what you should base creation and improvisation on. You know, what does this sound make you want to do? Make you want to play, you know, and then go back to, okay, I can facilitate myself better. Okay, this is C minor and this and that. That feels nice. Or, okay, this feels nice. I really like how this note and this note together makes me feel, and it brings me here. So I'm gonna mess with that a little bit, you know? Yeah, it might be the 2 and the major 7 on a minor chord, you know? It might be that. You know, and you can break it down, but it just makes me feel nice when I'm playing it on that chord. So I'm just going to keep playing that, you know.
Like, take me back to when you originally formed your connection with music and kind of what it was that, like, made you fall in love with music. Like, what made you want to kind of devote your life to it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I first started playing bass in church, 7 years old. Like most musicians that I was growing up around, my father, gospel musician, played guitar and sang. Music was kind of a connection between me and my father that strengthened our relationship. You know, we had a great relationship, but it was a bonding thing, like a passing of the torch. He wanted me to learn about music. He saw in me that I was musically inclined, so he nurtured it. So did my mom. So did my family. You know, my great uncle was a famous jazz drummer and composer. His name is Walter Bolden. So the music was always around me, and I gravitated toward it. And in church specifically, I noticed the way the congregation honed in on what the bass player was doing, and the vibration coming from the bass really resonated with me. So I got interested, and it was always a love. Music was a love. I started working with my father's band when I was 12 and did a bunch of shows all down south and East Coast. But at the same time, I was studying tuba and trombone in the school system and studied classically for 10 years. And it wasn't until the summer between 6th and 7th grade that I fell in love, or what we used to say, caught the bug. Caught the jazz bug of African-American classical music. You know, I caught that bug. I was studying at the Hartford Conservatory with a guy named Marshall Brown, a tuba player, a trombone player, actually, that was teaching me tuba, amazing musician, and challenging me to, that was the first time I had to read, play bassoon parts on tuba and you know, flute parts on tuba, you know, really challenged me. So my ears were open that particular summer. And that's the summer that I met David Santoro. He was playing with, they had a faculty concert, and David was playing bass with the faculty for the summer program. And they played Green Dolphin Street, and they played, I actually remember the tune, they played Green Dolphin Street, and they played maybe I Love You. Dee-dee-da, dee-dee-dee-dee, doo-dee-da, dee-dee-dee-da, dee-dee-da. But it was all these weird changes, and I'm like, and Dave was playing everything. So I came home that day, told my mom, I was like, I want to play upright bass. You know, that's what I want to do. I want to do it. And so she said, okay, and we found a way. And I actually began studying with Dave Santoro from eighth grade all throughout high school. By the time I graduated high school, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a musician. By then, I had done so many weird, interesting things musically. When I was 18, I decided for many reasons to get a job, you know, and not go to college right off the bat. I decided to get a job. And I got a phone call that November. I was already hanging with some of the musicians at the Hart School at the time, playing some gigs around town. And I knew who Jackie McLean was. I had friends who went to the Artist Collective. I went to the Hartford Conservatory. That November, Jackie McLean called my house. My mom's like, Jackie McLean's on the phone. And I get on the phone, I'm like, Mr. McLean, I'm thinking it's a joke. And Jackie's like, hey, Desron, what are you doing? You know, you should be in my program. All of my students are saying that they love you. They're playing with you. And why aren't you in class? Why aren't you in my program? I know your family, me and your Uncle Walt were tight. You know, I remember you as a kid coming by the house. You should be here playing in my program. You know, why don't you audition? So I was like, all right. And, you know, of course I auditioned. And but at that point, that year, so much happened. That was the year that I decided that, okay, I want to go to college for this. I just don't want to go to college for this. This is what I want to do, regardless of the paper I get. You know, it's not going to be what determines me doing what I want to do. I want to, at that point, I was already addicted to Mingus. I was addicted to Sam Jones, Ray Brown, Ron Carter, all the great bass players, James Jamison. I was well studied on all of them, Chuck Rainey. And I moved to the city in 2011. I've been working here since the fall of 1999. I've been working here in New York City since then. I moved here in 2011 with some very important gigs in my bag. I was in Cyrus Chestnut's trio. I was working with Pharoah Sanders. I was working with Eric Reed. I was in Renee McLean's band for years. Steve Davis's band for years, made a bunch of records with him. New York City is not a place for the faint of heart, you know? No matter how great of a player you are, no matter how great of a artist you may be, even if you do realize you're a great artist, the city will crush your ego. But no matter how great you are, you have to have a work ethic. You have to have a hustle. You have to have a drive. You have to have something that you want to do, even if you don't know what your ultimate goal is. And a lot had to happen for me to be in this space. You know, I've been leading bands since I was 18 in Hartford with the nudge from the first nudge was from Jackie McLean. He told me to write my own music. So when I moved here, I wanted to establish myself more as a leader. But unfortunately, you got to make some money. You got to pay bills. And no matter how well you are respected amongst the musicians, you know, a lot of my friends played my music. There's a lot of records that I'm on where I brought a tune to the session, or I helped invested time in sessions and helped build something beautiful. And so the opportunities for me as a leader were being pushed down, and the opportunities for me as a sideman to be a part of different people's projects was increasing. You know, as an artist, as a creative, if you're going to do things the right way, you have to be all in, you know, because that way you have no regrets.
Only got a couple more questions for you here. This is awesome, man. Thank you so much for joining me here, Des.
No doubt.
Talk to me about what you would say is the number one takeaway or piece of advice or mantra or like lesson learned from your story, from what you've been through, and really how you've overcome the adversity you have.
Man, you know, I wouldn't say I've had a lot of adversities. I think out of any you know, when you have a sword that's sharpened, there's a lot that has to go through to become a sword. I would say to any young musician or anyone striving to learn their craft, be what it, whatever it is, you know, make sure you're honest about what you want to do, why you want to do it, and whatever it takes for you to get the knowledge that you need, you know, and you never know what knowledge you need. You just got to keep searching. Whatever it takes to get that knowledge, get it and utilize it. Understand it, know where it all comes from, and then take a chance. Take a chance, and but you got to do that every day. You got to do that every day. I take a chance every day on any time I get a chance to be on the bandstand. I'm taking a chance before the first note, you know, and then once we're in it, the whole thing is a chance, you know, because chances are you're gonna sound like shit. Pardon my French, but it's the truth. You know, chances are you are going to sound like alien waste, you know, but there's a chance that you're going to sound something higher than yourself, you know, and that's what you shoot for. That's what you shoot for. So, you know, and you have to have a lot. You have to have a lot with you, you know, that's your armor, you know, however you get that knowledge, the rate at which you digest knowledge and fully digest it to the point where you're understanding it, the knowledge you're seeking, you know, the people you surround yourself with, how much are they rubbing off on you, or how much are you tuning them out? You know, all of that is your armor, you know, practicing, that's your armor, you know, listening. We definitely don't listen as much like we used to. I myself have to tell myself I need to listen more to things that are happening today, things that happened yesterday, things that might happen tomorrow. I have to listen more. I'm always have to listen more. I'm always finding something that's like, yeah, that's killing. Or I like that. That makes me feel good. Or that makes me feel weird. I don't know what that is, but it makes me feel something. You know, if it has to make you feel, then that's just stuff out there where it's like, okay, I don't want to fuck with any of that. That's not for me. But it's great. I respect it. That's not for me. You know, there's a lot of everything out here. You know, but just, you know, take a chance, and you know, you got to be an astronaut. Think about the astronauts. They learn about outer space all day, all night, and no matter how many times the book or this manual tells them that this is what this nebula looks like when you see it, no matter how many times they've seen a billion pictures of it, when they open the window, when they're out there, they're like, whoa, you know, they're seeing shit that they couldn't even dream about seeing, you know, and the whole process that it took, they risked their lives to get up there. You know, that's crazy, man. That's music right there. That's what you gotta be. You gotta be an astronaut. You know, you gotta be a lion on the hunt, you know. You know, think about the female lioness. Their bodies are physically trained and physically built to take down, you know, wildebeests. You know, they're built to take down animals that are 3, 4, 5 times the size of them, and they're strong, but they also got to be savvy, because this animal, you know, they might try to roll up on a herd of not the wildebeest, but the ones that they have them anyway, and they might get killed in the process, but they got to feed their family, you know, and they respect nature. There's so much discernment, you know, they respect nature. So they know the whole chain of life. It's like, I'm going to make this kill, you know, to sustain my pride, you know, and it serves a purpose. I'm going to go for this one, and I'm going to shoot in this one, and this one might kill me in the process, but I'm going to take that chance because I got to feed my family, you know? Yes, it's a very vulgar, dark side of it, but it's the same process that the astronauts are doing, you know? Same thing, same exact thing, same thing pilots do when they take off. How many times Have they said, "What, when you push this button, you pull this, that's going to work. This is what it's supposed to do." It might not do it. So you got to figure out how you might have to shimmy that joystick a little bit. Wait a minute. All right, Jim, we're good.
You got to understand the why.
You got to understand the why. You see what I'm saying? You know what's happening. You know what's happening. Mm. That's the best advice I can give. Understand the why.
I love it. Dezron Douglas, man, thank you so much for everything. Thank you so much for coming on this show. Man, so great to
my voice, you know,
have this on wisdom rubbing off on me. I feel like buzzing, man.
There's so much to learn, man. There's so many great people out here dropping knowledge every day. I'm still learning. So someone drops some knowledge on me. So it's my duty to share. Mm. You
know? Well, talking about sharing, got link in the description to some of Dezron Douglas' work here. Listen to his music. It's some amazing stuff. And yeah, man, welcome back anytime.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.